In last week's sermon, we talked about why we're here, that we're created as image bearers, and that we are intended by God to represent Him on earth. We're supposed to show the world what God is like, and to show the love and compassion that God has for His creation. We had Jesus who came as an example and who lived out for us what it means to actually do that, to go around healing the sick and giving sight to the blind and ministering to people who are hurting and are helpless. Well, that seems to put kind of a burden on us, things that we have to do that can be a little bit onerous, it seems like. And so I wanted to take a little bit of time over these next 2 weeks to talk about the idea of, well, what really makes life worth living for? Or what's worth dying for? And so that's what we're going to be talking about over the next these next 2 weeks. Now, I should give you a little bit of a warning. When we talk about what worth's life or what is worth living for, we're going to look at it through a character from the Bible named Solomon. And so Solomon's perspective, I think you're going to discover, is maybe just a little bit questionable. And so we'll talk about that as we go through. But so let's take a look at who Solomon was. Solomon was a son of David. He was born of Bathsheba. He was a little bit down in the line of succession. He had a number of older siblings that should be in line to inherit David's throne and become king after King David. But he was named as David's successor. So David chose him to succeed him as king, and David had him anointed by the prophet Nathan. So the plan is that Solomon is going to take over as king after David dies. Now, when David did die, Solomon did become king. He then purged the kingdom of any usurpers or people who might try to take the throne from him. And he also followed the wishes of his father David. And basically, there were some folks who had mistreated David or tormented David during his life and during his kingdom. And so he left it to Solomon to make sure that those people came to the proper end, if you understand my meaning. Kind of an interesting kingdom. He was probably about 15 years old when he became king. So he doesn't have a whole lot of life experience. His mom and the prophet Nathan kind of watched out for him and helped him to get established. But while David was still alive, he had a conversation with his son. And in 1 Kings 2, verses 1 through 3, we have David's charge to Solomon. And the scripture there says that when the time drew near for David to die, he gave a charge to Solomon, his son. "I'm about to go the way of all the earth," he said. "So be strong, act like a man, and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in obedience to him and keep his decrees and commands, his laws and regulations as written in the law of Moses. Do this so that you may prosper in all you do and wherever you go." So David basically tells him, hey, do exactly what I've done. Walk faithfully with God. Follow the laws and decrees and everything that he's established, and it will be all good for you. You'll thrive. Well, Solomon actually gets off to a pretty good start. In 1 Kings 3, verses 4 through 14, it gives a story from fairly early in his life. So Solomon is king now, and it says in 1 Kings 3, "The king went to Gibeon to offer sacrifices, for that was the most important high place. And Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, 'Ask for whatever you want me to give you.' Solomon answered, 'You have shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You've continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on his throne to this very day. Now, Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. But I'm only a little child, and I do not know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people you have chosen, a great people too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours? So you can see that Solomon initially, he's quite humble. He recognizes that he doesn't know very well what he ought to be doing or how to help the people. And so he has quite a humble request. The passage goes on and says that the Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, since you have asked for this, and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I'll give to you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in obedience to me and keep my decrees and commands as David your father did, I'll give you a long life. So Solomon gets off to a really good start. He is humble and approaching God. God greatly blesses him. Solomon then is going to be building God's temple. He takes 7 years to do that. He starts out really well, starts out strongly. But there's a little bit of a problem. In 1 Kings 3:3, it says that Solomon showed his love for the Lord by walking according to the instructions given him by his father David, except that he offered sacrifices and burned incenses on the high places. So there's a little bit of an exception here. I'm going to do what God wants me to do, except, you know, it's not always convenient to worship in the right places and in the right way. So he makes some compromises and burns incense on the high places. So he's not supposed to be doing that. How big of a deal is that? Tough to know. You know, I said that Solomon builds God's temple in Jerusalem. Took 7 years to do that. Another indicator that there might be a little bits of problem going on, he then takes 13 years to build his own palace. And so there's a little bit of question about where his priorities might be. That misplaced priorities is an indication that something is perhaps primed to go wrong. And at 1 Kings 11, we see where things actually do go quite wrong. In verses 4 through 10, in 1 Kings 11, it says that as Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely, as David his father had done. On a hill east of Jerusalem, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable god of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He did the same for all his foreign wives, who burned incense and offered sacrifices to their gods. Solomon had many wives and many concubines, and it's those foreign wives that led him astray. The Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. Although he had forbidden Solomon to follow other gods, Solomon did not keep the Lord's command. I think an important part of this passage, it says that the Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord. So he's not faithfully following the Lord as he had been charged to do by David, as God had told him that he needed to do. So he's kind of turned his back on God and is just living life. Now, Solomon does a lot of good stuff, but he does a lot of bad stuff. And Solomon was king over Israel for 40 years. And he had tremendous wisdom, the wisest person who ever lived apart from Christ. Well, Solomon then, in living his life, tries to find meaning and purpose for his life. So he's going to see what things are going to bring meaning and purpose to my life. And so he applies his wisdom to be able to try to figure that out. And the book that records all of this for us is the book of Ecclesiastes. And so that's where we're going to spend pretty much all of our time for through the rest of this sermon, is to look at these things that Solomon looked at to see where we do have meaning and purpose in life. What makes life worth living? Well, in Ecclesiastes 1, verses 12 through 14, it says, "I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind." Even at the very beginning of the book of Ecclesiastes, in verse 2, his primary conclusion, "Meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Solomon's conclusion, as he lives his life, life is absolutely meaningless. Now, I want to give you a warning with this. As we look at all the things that Solomon looked at, this is going to be depressing. It's going to be discouraging. Hang on for this little bit of a ride, because we'll see how it comes out at the end. One of the things that Solomon decided to investigate to look for meaning and purpose is the wisdom that God had given him. So in Ecclesiastes 1, verses 17 and 18, it says, "Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom, and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief." Some of us might have some insight with that. Watching the news too much can be depressing. The more wisdom you have, the more you see the foolishness that goes on. And it just is discouraging and depressing. In 2:15, Ecclesiastes 2:15, it says, "Then I said to myself, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless." See, both the fool and the wise person, they're going to die. So what benefit is there to being wise? It really doesn't do anything for us. It's meaningless. In Ecclesiastes 2, verses 1 through 8, he starts looking at pleasure and work and the accomplishments that can come about by doing our work. And in 2, verses 1 through 8, "I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom." Now, we're going to carry this on in just a second here, but notice that pleasure he finds to be meaningless. Think about all the things that go on in our culture today where people are just trying to numb themselves almost with pleasure. Alcoholism runs rampant. Drugs, from marijuana on up, trying to get just a little bit of pleasure to help us deal with the meaninglessness of life. That's somewhat discouraging, and even that little bit of pleasure we get is meaningless. He goes on and he says, I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. So think about all these things that he just listed. Power, wealth, all the trappings that go along with having immeasurable wealth. And it didn't satisfy. A harem, 300 wives, 700 concubines, gave himself over to sexual abandon to as much as he could possibly want. And in all of it, he says what? Well, in verses, in chapter 2, verses 11 or 10 and 11, carrying this thought on, he says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. So pleasure, we enjoy it for a short time, and in the end, it's meaningless. All the accomplishments of our lives, all the degrees that we might get, all the job titles, all the trappings of wealth, it all comes to nothing and is meaningless. And this caused Solomon to despair. In 2:17, he says, so I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. In Ecclesiastes 4:4, he's still trying this stuff. And he said, I saw that all toil and all achievement springs from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. You know, if we're going to try and keep up with the Joneses, and the Joneses are going to try and keep up with us, and we just keep moving up the ladder and they keep moving up, it's all meaningless. In Ecclesiastes 5, he's talking specifically about wealth. And in verses 10 through 12, he says that whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? The sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether they eat little or much. But as for the rich, their abundance permits them no sleep. You ever been kept awake at night because of, you're worried about all the things that you have to take care of? The house, the cars, the jobs, the toys, all these things that we have. Their abundance permits them no sleep. In Ecclesiastes 6:2, he continues his lament. God gives some people wealth, possessions, and honor so that they lack nothing their hearts desire, but God does not grant them the ability to enjoy them, and strangers enjoy them instead. This is meaningless, a grievous evil. You know, you might spend your life getting all the nice toys, and then God demands your life from you, and they go to someone else, and you don't get to enjoy them. That's meaningless. Now, there's at least one group in here that I suspect is not too worried about the wealth aspect. The young folks, high school, college-age students, probably not in that wealthy category yet. Wouldn't mind being wealthy. Let's give it a try. But they might have some of their own issues to deal with. In Ecclesiastes 11, verses 8 through 10, Solomon has looked at that and said, he says there that however many years anyone may live, let them enjoy them all. But let them remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. Everything to come is meaningless. You who are young, be happy while you're young, and let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. So then, banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body. For youth and vigor are meaningless. Just thought you folks might need some encouragement too, just like us old folks. Now, Solomon has looked at all these different things. Wealth, power, pleasure, youth, all these things. And he's kind of come to the conclusion that, yeah, this... there is no meaning or purpose to life. There's some other kind of summary thoughts that he has about this. I pulled some of them out for you. In Ecclesiastes 6:12, he says, "For who knows what is good for a person in life during the few and meaningless days they pass through like a shadow?" You know, who knows what's good during these few and meaningless days that we're going to pass through like a shadow, and then we die. In Ecclesiastes 9:9, it says, this one actually starts out somewhat encouraging. Enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days. For this is your lot in life, and your toilsome labor under the sun. Oh, yay. Well, I do enjoy life with my wife, whom I do love. But meaningless life, all my meaningless days, this is my lot in life, and my toilsome labor under the sun. Solomon has looked at all these things. And meaning, purpose, oh, tough to find. Everything seems to be meaningless. In Ecclesiastes 12, verses 13 and 14, he kind of summarizes the whole thing. And he says, "Now all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it's good or evil." So the bottom line from Solomon's perspective, all of life is meaningless. And the best that we can do is fear God, keep his commandments, obey the rules, live life the best we can, recognize we're going to fall short. God's going to bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, everything that we think we've forgotten about, everything that we think that God doesn't know about. All of it's going to be exposed, whether it's good or evil, and we're going to be judged for it. And wow, isn't that encouraging? obviously not. Where's the meaning? Where's the purpose? We're created to be image bearers. We know that. How can the wisest person who ever lived come to these conclusions? Why is he so glum? Well, there's a couple answers to that are sort of buried in the text that are not obvious if you just read the book of Ecclesiastes. The first one is a phrase that shows up 25 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. And that phrase is the phrase under the sun. You remember we talked earlier about the idea that Solomon turned his back on God, that he did not walk with God as his father David had done. The phrase under the sun, probably the best way for us to understand that phrase is life apart from God. Life in the natural world. Life if we leave God out of the picture. So if we try to live our lives and leave God just out of the picture and just ignore God, ignore anything that he has to say, ignore any impact that he tries to have in our lives, even to some extent ignoring any instructions that he would try to give us, that would be trying to live life under the sun. And quite honestly, for a person who's trying to turn their back on God, who wants nothing to do with God, probably the best thing that they can do is live a life of hedonism and give themselves over to enjoying whatever they can for whatever time they can, and just recognize that God will bring everything into judgment at the proper time, and you'll have to pay the price. But for right now, if you want to live your life apart from God, go for the gusto. It's about all you can do. But Solomon is describing life under the sun, life apart from our relationship with God. There's another big clue that that's what's going on. The book of Ecclesiastes is kind of unique. God is mentioned lots and lots of times in the book of Ecclesiastes. But the word that Solomon uses for God is the word Elohim. Now, the word for God, for God's relationship with Israel, is Yahweh. Yahweh is Israel's covenant God. That's Yahweh is the God who has a personal relationship with the nation of Israel, the God who has a personal relationship with David. That's Yahweh. Elohim, if you see the word God in Scripture with a little g, as in the gods, it could very well be Elohim that's used there. Elohim is sometimes even used for kings. They will be Elohim, human kings. So Elohim that's being used in the book of Ecclesiastes, the God that Solomon is dealing with, is the God of the universe, the creator God, the sustainer God, but a God who is distant, who's not personal. There's no relationship. It's just he's God out there, and he made it all, and he's awesome and powerful and all that, but I don't have any kind of a personal relationship with him. If that's the vision or the view of God that you have, that God is remote, he's distant. Maybe he started things a long time ago, but he doesn't intervene. He doesn't have anything to do with our lives today. That's Elohim. And if you're dealing with Elohim, there's not a whole lot of meaning or purpose that you can find living here under the sun. So how do we get out of that trap? How do we have actual meaning and purpose in our lives? Well, the difference is how we view God. Do we have a personal relationship with God? Is he Yahweh or is he Elohim? See, God loved us enough that he sent Christ to die for us, so that we could have a personal, intimate relationship with him. He desires that relationship with us. He pursues us day in, day out, all the time, for us to have that relationship with him. Sometimes we go astray. Sometimes we turn our backs on him. Sometimes we rebel. And God still keeps pursuing that intimate relationship with us. If we want our lives to have meaning and purpose, then it's not going to be in wealth. It's not going to be in power. It's not going to be in pleasure. It's not going to be in our youth. It's not going to be in any of these things that are going to be passing away, that end when our lives end on this earth. The only way our lives can have meaning and purpose is if we invest in something that's going to last longer than our physical lives. And that's our relationship with a very personal God who loved us, who died for us, who gives us meaning and purpose, who has a role for us to fulfill, who's placed us in relationship not only with himself, but others in the body of Christ, and who's given us a mission to show his love to a world that doesn't even know who he is. And so my challenge for you is to take that God who might be sometimes far away in your life and to draw near to God as he draws near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded, James tells us. Instead of pursuing power, pleasure, riches, wealth, pursue the God who loved you and who gave himself for you in the person of Jesus Christ. Have a great day, and God bless you as you go faithfully with him.
This has been a message from Gaines Church in Caledonia, Michigan. We'd love to have you join us at one of our Sunday services. Visit GainesChurch.org for more information. One life, one hope, one destination.